Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. We're going to talk some USC Trojan football with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for USCFootball.com. If you have any questions for us, you can send them in. Email podcast at USCFootball.com, or you can call or text. Our number is 424-254-9141. That's 424-254-9141. Please subscribe on iTunes or any of your podcasting apps. Our URL is itunes.com/peristylepodcast, but we're on Google Play and Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio and Audio Boom and all those things. So please subscribe. Tell your friends. You've been listening to the show. We've been getting great record numbers. We appreciate everyone taking some time out of your day to listen to our show. It's Monday, but it's our third show of the week already. I did a reverse emergency podcast in the Phoenix airport about 4 a.m. Harvey Hyde came on yesterday. And today, like I said, we're going to bring in Dan Weber. Welcome in, Dan. How are you?
Hey, good. Now that you say that about your reverse emergency podcast at 4 a.m, Shotgun and I could have done one on I-10 where we could have done a kind of a live Facebook. Now, obviously, there's probably nowhere you could transmit it unless you have a satellite phone, I guess, driving across the desert. But we could have done one of those on the way back, now that I think about it.
That would have been really good with you guys chatting. Now, you want to be careful because you're driving and podcasting. But I think we did. Didn't we do that once? And we tried to do that coming back from, like, the Pac-12 championship.
Actually, we did. Yeah. Well, the last time I made that trip immediately after the game, I got about halfway back, and the word started filtering out that a certain head coach had been fired on the tarmac.
Oh.
And I remember pulling over onto the side of the road to try to figure out what could I find out, and will I be able to post the story here and all that kind of stuff. But luckily it wasn't that kind of excitement after the game heading back to L.A. This was a little better outcome.
Yeah, that was the Lane Kiffin episode 4 years ago. Then 2 years ago, USC gets an unexpected blowout win, and then Steve Sarkisian implodes soon after that. We'll see. We've got Arizona coming to town next weekend, so that could be, I guess it could get interesting, but seemed like a less eventful trip to the desert than some of the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you judge by the, the P people, more USC people than not thought the Trojans were going to lose. And get battered, so I'm thinking they were, a typical Pac-12 game. Who knows which team is going to show up in which uniforms, and then you're always at Arizona State. They either show up in really ugly black uniforms or really ugly maroon uniforms or yellow, whatever. I feel sorry for Arizona State. They have kind of no shot at coming up with a good look. But they did. I'm not sure. Did they even come out? I mean, they just they were never in the game. That was strange. And then you think, wait a minute. They just beat Washington. They just beat Utah on the road. What the heck's going on here? And then you realize, wait. If you didn't realize it, the last play of the first half made you realize it. Uh-oh, it's the Pac-12. Of course, this is what happens in the Pac-12. Stuff that doesn't happen anywhere else in America.
It does happen in the Pac-12. Speaking of the Pac-12, I got some, hold on. Breaking news. So, just got an email, Pac-12 Players of the Week. I thought maybe a USC guy like a Uchenna Nwosu or a Ronald Jones would get it, but Khalil Tate, Arizona's quarterback, wins it again. So it's the first time in conference history he won it He was Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week 4 weeks in a row. So that's never happened before. Then Harrison Phillips got it from Stanford. Yeah, and Arizona's kicker got it for – he had a 57-yard field goal.
Yeah. It's just amazing. I think we would go out and watch him in the summer, watch him play 7-on-7. Never did understand what is the position for him. Arizona didn't exactly know. I mean, he got to play against USC last year, but he shared the job with the converted tight end, so Arizona didn't know what to do with him. The first part of this year, he wasn't their starting quarterback. So nobody's known what to do with him until, let's see, maybe he'll start. We got nothing else going for us, and there he is 4 straight weeks, Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week. It's kind of like Christian Rector, who couldn't get on the field for USC for the last year and a half, and then gets on the field and makes, I guess, the AP midseason All-American, second team. It's just crazy stuff happens, and more often than not, it happens in the Pac-12.
Yeah, it certainly does. So USC is going to play an opponent that's got the reigning Pac-12 Offensive Player and Special Teams Player of the Week. So it's certainly going to be a challenge. Before we jump into the questions, Dan, I wanted to thank our Trader Joe's. Has been a great sponsor for us for the last several months. Both Dan and I love shopping at Trader Joe's. It's their 50th anniversary this year, and like we talked about, we're lucky to have a partnership with them and having an event over at USC at the new Trader Joe's location at the USC University Village. I got some friends coming in town. It's homecoming this weekend, so if you want to do a little tailgating before homecoming, I suggest go over to the USC Village. Get there early. Go over to the Village. Go to Trader Joe's. Pick up all the stuff you need. I got friends coming in from Louisiana. They're going to come check it out, and that's one of the things they wanted to do. So I totally am recommending that to you and anyone else out there. Great beer and wine selections, lots of cheeses, stuff if you want to just kind of finger foods are great, snacks. If you want to have your tailgate, but they also have all of the staples too, like eggs, milk, butter, bread, things like that too. But especially for tailgating, so many cool stuff, so many cool things at Trader Joe's. If you just have like a picnic basket, nothing, or if you have a grill, any kind of whatever you have there, they have food that can help complement your party and really make it a good one. So it's homecoming weekend, Dan. So definitely people should go over to Trader Joe's and check it out.
Yeah, and they've got all day. Another nice early 7:45 start that will hit the East Coast at 10:45. So a good look for the Pac-12 once again. Although there is good news this week, the Colorado game kicks off at 2 in the afternoon. So I guess that we could get hit by a blizzard, but at least it won't be a blizzard at night. That's the really good news of the week from the Pac-12, that the USC-Colorado game is at 2 in the afternoon, and you can watch Ralphie run in the sun, and life is good. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, the whole so it's funny, USC fans can be very particular about homecoming because they don't want a 12:30 game because there's no tailgating, basically. It's really hard to tailgate. I mean, you got to get there super early. And the 7:45s are pretty late and stuff, too. So I think people wanted it kind of like a 4 o'clock window. But probably, I don't know, what do you think? Probably better the 7:45 than the 12:30?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Although it looks like we finally left summer behind, cross your fingers. We've had two of the, I guess, hottest 3 games in history at the Coliseum this year. So, we don't need any more of those noon games and ideally – no more 7:45, but it's a Pac-12, and they dominate late-night television. I guess there's nothing you can do about it. So whenever you don't get one of those, like at Colorado next week, life is good.
All right, let's see. We got a lot of questions again. We're going to start with this voicemail question. This actually was sent in from our buddy JD that he sent it in before the game, but it was kind of a relevant topic. I wanted you to discuss it. Here you go, Dan.
JD from DC. Dan, I'm recording this on Friday before the ASU game, and while I'm anticipating a loss, regardless of the outcome, I just couldn't not comment on the Kenny Bigelow, quote, transition. It was just so bizarre the way it occurred so nonchalantly and casually, and then it was so accepted by the coaches, even the players and stuff. I mean, I don't care how far buried he is in the depth chart. We're really hurting on the D-line, and with Rector out, He should have just announced yesterday, I'm practicing today because obviously you may need me on Friday. It just suggests so much of what's lacking about the culture and the milieu and the awareness and the sense of urgency and commitment and this entire program. You know, that's what's got to change.
Well, I think, J.D., you might be some assuming, I'll play the part of the lawyer here, assuming some facts that aren't in evidence. And I just don't think, having talked to Kenny, I'm not sure we know exactly how this all went down in terms of Kenny and the coaches and the retirement and what have you. I would tend to not be as judgmental about this, having, and we're fairly close to the situation, and you don't feel like you know everything that's involved in how this decision was made. So I would probably back off being really judgmental as to what this says about the whole program. I just don't think we know enough. I really don't. I hate to say that, and it's not certain that if we did know everything, we would, you know, tell you or whatever. And not to make this too, you know, conspiratorial or anything. I just think we don't know. And in the absence of knowing more, I would not be real judgmental here.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I thought there was a chance of that happening, but it did not. He was down there as a coach. We got a voicemail from Ray in SEC country. Unfortunately, Ray, it was like over 2 minutes long, so please try to keep him like under a minute and we'll read it. But the gist of his voicemail was he was happy with the way that the team played. He said that he had new appreciation for Lane Kiffin, the way he handled some of the scholarship reductions, considering the defense played a lot better just getting a couple guys back in Porter Gustin and Josh Fatu. But he likes the defense, and he thinks they, you know, it's not a popular opinion. He thinks that a lot of people don't like the defense, but he thinks they make life difficult on opposing teams.
I think that Ray is correct, and I know coming from SEC country, you're going to look at it that way. It did matter to get Porter and Josh back. It really did. It just made things look different. They had a different feel about themselves, and you saw some of those outside rushes when Porter was on one side, Chenna was on the other, and it was like, let's meet at the quarterback. I thought the coaching was good. I thought they really did a good job. They did things like they determined really accurately where Manny Wilkins liked to drop to, that it was kind of a, you know, 9 yards deep. And you could see him beating guys on both sides and meeting at the quarterback. And you saw Rasheem with the, you know, kind of a secondary pass rush. And at times he cleaned things up when they flushed Wilkins. And then you saw Josh just, you know, hanging in there, and you know that accident was not easy on him. But here are two guys that hadn't hadn't really practiced. It went through the Thursday, kind of a light some practice, some walkthrough kind of a thing, and said got cleared by the doctors, and they were out there, early at some crunch time plays. And I thought that did wonders to the defense. And I thought they didn't feel sorry for themselves that Iman Marshall was out. And you talked to him afterwards and with Isaiah Langley in there. And they said, no difference. We weren't going to let it make any difference at all. And I thought the tackling had improved terrifically. And a lot of that was they were in the right place at the right time and in the right frame of mind. And it was just hard to describe. Talking to Ryan earlier, and we were saying about what the difference was between the team that showed up at Notre Dame and the team that showed up in Tempe. And, you know, if you would put a point number on it, I don't know, were they 50 points, 75 points better in Tempe than they were at Notre Dame? It's just amazing that you can have that kind of a variance from, week to week. But I think the defense is a big part of it. They were solid, and he had a real good idea of what they could do against Arizona State. Now, Arizona State's not a great offense, and they didn't have Keenan Ballage to run the ball. And they just didn't let him do almost anything. And Jack Jones did a great job matching up with 6'4", Nikhil Harry. And but I think the rush and the aggressiveness and the getting Manny Wilkins moving around and being in places where he wasn't comfortable meant a lot. And one would hope that that's a sign of things to come.
Yeah, certainly was a positive, but a lot more positive. So, all right, well, let's move on. We got Eddie and Whittier, who said hi to me. He was at the game and waved to me, called down to me. I got to talk to him briefly from he was up in the stands after the game. He said, two questions for you and Dan. Dan, what do you think practice will look like this week, as in physicality and mentally? Are the players going to be prepared knowing that this week is another huge week? It really sucks. But to our luck, every week is big, and it can't affect the Pac-12. We ever catch a break. Hope the players are not hungover the ASU win. Maybe he was a little hungover when he was typing this. Eddie, we got a little clear here. And he said, second, what in the world is going on with Jamel Cook? I smell transfer happening with such a high ceiling. I can't believe it. Thanks for the hard work and fight on, Eddie and Whittier.
Yeah, well, I don't smell, from what I understand, I do not smell transfer coming. And I was glad to see Jamel get out there. He was in the middle of the pick six at the end. I know they have high hopes for him. I know he has high hopes for himself. I know he blames himself for kind of where he is right now. That's another place I would not go at this point. As far as this week in practice, the key is making it physical without pounding. At this time of year, you do not want to pound on one another necessarily, but you have to play physical. And that's the secret. You know, that separates the great coaches. And I thought it was interesting. I was listening on the early morning way back. They already have a Chargers pregame show, which is amazing. Who knew they came on that? I know they were playing in New England, and who knew they came on that early? And so I'm listening, and they're interviewing Drew Bledsoe, former Washington State guy, Chargers, I mean, a quarterback. He played with the distinction of having played for Pete Carroll, Bill Parcells, and Bill Belichick, three Hall of Fame Super Bowl winning coaches. And he said, they're as different as they can possibly be, personality-wise, completely different people. However, he said two things made them the same in practice. Attention to detail and physicality. And it's clear Clay is an attention to detail guy in practice. And I think the key issue is getting that physicality to where you need it to be without pounding on guys. Certainly looks like they got it right last week, or the kids responded in a way it didn't matter what they did in practice. They were, you know, they were up to speed physically for Saturday night. And I think that's the challenge. And we shall see. You don't want to give them a message that it's not about being physical, or as Ryan found out last week when he interviewed the kids, that they look and see it's just going to be, not full pads, and it's whoop-de-doo. This is going to be great. We can go out there and play, touch football. So that's the line they've got to go through this week. I think it helps this week that Khalil Tate, as fast as he is, they list him. Now, whether he's really this tall or not, they list him at 6'2", 215. I don't think he's 6'2". He might be 215. But you better put a hat on him, and I know that's not always the right way in this age of being concussion conscious. But you got to get in front of him. You can't tackle him with your arms. You can't fingernail tackle him. You can't grab him by the foot and hope he falls down, because he's not. So I think their focus, after they watch some Arizona highlights, and there are a ton of them, they know they better intersect with Khalil Tate, and they better get their angles down, their tackling angles, their pursuit angles, all of that has to be exactly right. So I think you'll see that kind of focus in practice this week.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll be out there tomorrow Stephen Poway says, do you know how many previously injured USC players returned to full speed this past week in Tempe? It seemed like the return of Gustin Fatu and even Michael Pittman and Daniel Metorbebe made a difference, albeit against a much weaker opponent than Notre Dame. It was also very sad to watch Malapai and Toland go down with injuries in garbage time. He said, P.S., I thought we had a great game overall, but why was it Jenny Harris back there on punt returns? I thought Jack Jones had done more to solidify his spot, notwithstanding the fumble.
Well, that's a good question. That's the one question that didn't get asked after the game or in the Sunday conference call. It'll be one of the early questions asked after practice Tuesday, I'll guarantee you. You're right. Did not get good answer. Was it just the fact that they wanted him to totally concentrate on shutting down N'Keal Harry? That's a possibility. I don't know. It's almost sometimes not exactly fair to put a Jenny back there. I'm not. There are times you watch it and you wonder, does he have a Kevon Seymour problem? If you remember, Kevon didn't get his eyes tested until he got to the NFL and they realized that he badly needed corrective lenses. And there are times that you just wonder, is a Jenny seeing the ball really well? I mean, he did a better job, I thought, but it's a problem, I think. And I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember. What was the other question, Ryan?
Oh, so let's see. How many players, previous players
came
back injured?
Oh, players coming back. Yeah. You know, what else they're excited about is Clay announced today that Vavai, his MRI was not, he does not have a problem with the MRI. The MRI came back negative. And so they've moved him up to day-to-day. Now, I watched him walk by after the game Saturday. He didn't have anything on his knee, didn't have any wrap on it or whatever, so that was hopeful to some extent. It looked painful. I'm guessing they haven't said exactly. I'm guessing a knee sprain. I guess there's always a possibility it was a contusion, and it's just a bruise that's painful as heck. But pain tolerance will be probably the key this week in terms of can he run on it? I mean, and how much pain is that? And how does he have swelling in there, and that kind of thing? But they also said they're very encouraged that Stephen Carr will be back. So yeah, you might get two more guys back. Although Vavai was back Saturday and then he wasn't. But this looks like a time of year where you are getting guys healthy, and they keep saying that Daniel is getting closer and closer, and that they're putting in plays for him, and they're conscious of all the things that Daniel Motobebe can do. And I guess one of the touchdown plays that Deontay caught, I guess the second one, was actually a play for Daniel where they were running Deontay, I guess, behind him as a sort of the second possibility, but the ball was actually going to be thrown to Daniel, and Sam just was able to make an absolutely great throw to Deontay, not dissimilar to the Penn State throw, and just threw it through everybody and didn't have a problem. But they're putting in special plays for Daniel, so it looks like they really do feel he's back.
Let's go to Rich from Maryland. He said they should change the name of Pac-12 After Dark to Pac-12 After Midnight. I believe the Arizona game will be our third game that will conclude around 2 a.m. on Sunday for us loyal USC fans in the East. Doesn't USC care about their alumni and fans? The way things are playing out, the last two games could start at 10:45 p.m. also. Hopefully they do not attempt to play a night game in Colorado during November. We know that's not the case now. I guess the good news is it's not happening on a short week again. Rich in Maryland.
Yeah, I think there's a place where the Pac-12 has to get together with Larry Scott and the networks and say, look, you may give us a few dollars more to play these 10:45 games. We're going to play them only rarely. We're just not doing this. It's not fair. They admitted, for example, 2 years ago they cost Christian McCaffrey the Heisman Trophy, and there's no question they did. And if this year you can say people who are making the decisions on the playoffs and all that, say, look, we don't know enough about you guys, and the games we did see, it didn't look that great. I think the Pac-12, for whatever extra dollars they get from the TV contracts that allow them to be, yeah, it, for the TV people, it's the best game they can put by far at late at night. So they're thrilled that they can get a Power 5 conference, giving them good games for Friday night, Thursday night, late night Saturday. And you talk to the Pac-12 people, and they say, well, you know, it's basically we're beggars, and we can't be choosy. We just got to take whatever table scraps they throw to us. That's kind of the answer. And it follows up on, well, we don't make any money at all from our own network, so we got to chase the dollars wherever those dollars are. But that's not a position the Pac-12 should be in. And they need better leadership, obviously. They need more, I think, the more administrations around the Pac-12 have to stand up. The first time this year we heard from the conference president, the president of Washington State, who finally said how bad a deal this TV thing is turning out and how unhappy they are and how they've got to do something. Well, this is how many years we've been saying this, and finally, you know, the people whose job it is to raise the money and pay the money and do all that have to make it clear this is not acceptable. And for too long, I think Pac-12 administrations have just been willing to, you know, to go along with it. Now, for example, Washington State lost their athletic director a couple of weeks ago. He just left and went to Nebraska and told them he was leaving in a tweet and said, goodbye, I'm out of here, see ya. And I think it's starting to hurt when guys can go to much weaker programs in the Big Ten, for example, and they take in $20 million a year to start, more than the Pac-12 just from the TV contract. That has to change. And nobody in the Pac-12 seems to have a good idea as to how to make that happen. But at least they ought to start talking about it. And if they're not talking about it, you guys are talking about it, we're talking about it, they got to start talking about it. And they got to do something about it. And this is unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't know if anything will change, though. Mike says, almost every game we hear comments about Darnold throwing high and generally not as accurate as last year. In July, there were several media reports about Sam working with the quarterback coach Jordan Palmer to improve his throwing mechanics. I would like to hear your comment regarding a connection. Is Darnold thinking too much about his mechanics? Is he trying too hard to get it, quote-unquote, right, like overthinking a golf swing? Also, did Sam injure his finger during the game on Saturday? From Mike.
Huh. Don't know about the finger injury. He standing next to him, he didn't seem to have any issue with it. Didn't see anything on any of his fingers. So, you know, I know there are times you can see him working with his fingers like he's a a baseball pitcher and kind of. But I don't think so. But we'll check it out Tuesday for sure. As far as the mechanics thing, I think that story was really overblown. I mean, I think all they wanted to do was to make sure he didn't drop the ball below his belt when he didn't have to, or when there was no reason to do it. He just did it because he was athletic enough and quick enough with his release to be able to do that. He could do that and still readjust on the run or not and drill the target. He hasn't been as accurate this year, and I don't think we absolutely can say for sure what it is. They did admit that had a lingering ankle injury since Washington State, but it seemed like there were issues before that. My personal feeling has been that there's been some kind of a physical issue that's affected his mechanics a little bit, throwing on the run. He threw some great passes at at Arizona State. But there were times where he'd miss, a 7-yard, 8-yard slant for somebody who all you got to do is hit him in the hands or the numbers, and it's a first down, and the ball would be behind him. We've seen more of that this year. I don't know to what we would attribute that. I really don't think we've got a good answer. I did talk to Sam about the fact that at times when he scrambles, and certainly didn't seem to be the case at Arizona State with the 39-yard run that where he read the RPO perfectly and took off with the ball. But there are times I said, you seem to be getting taken down more this year by people like just grabbing your heel or your foot or your ankle. And he said, yeah, maybe, yeah, I guess. He did not disagree. He said, okay, yeah, I am. I said, what do you think that is? And he said, with this grin on his face, he said, coincidence. Just coincidence. And I was like, okay, coincidence. I mean, in a way, it was a kind of a good disarming answer. It isn't the answer, obviously, but that was the best he could come up with, because he isn't. I mean, last year, nobody brought him down from behind. You know, when he broke the pocket, he didn't get caught. The first guy to him never tackled him. That was one of the most amazing things that he went pretty much the whole year. And whoever was the first rush guy never tackled him. He avoided that guy every single time. And once he got scrambling, he never got caught from behind. I mean, that's what I always would compare him. Carson Palmer never did either, which was the amazing thing. People have always forgotten how great an athlete Carson Palmer was. But that was the one way you would characterize him, is he never got caught from behind. And I didn't look as fast as he was. He was way faster, way more athletic than he looked like. But so was Sam. And maybe not quite so much this year. So does that play into is there a change in his mechanics a little bit? I think yes. I don't think it's the, you know, dropping the ball below his waist and the thing they were working on in the summer. I don't think that has anything to do with it. But I think there are some mechanical issues, but I don't think we know exactly the cause of those.
All right, before we keep rolling, we've got a lot more questions. I wanted to thank our sponsor for this segment of the podcast, ZipRecruiter. So if you are in need of great talent for your business, but you don't have a lot of time, you don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools. You need smarter tools. So with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job on over 100 websites, leading job boards, with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being sent to the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter will put a smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you'll receive the best possible matches. And that's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. So no wonder 80% of employees who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. It's definitely the smartest way to hire, ZipRecruiter. So what we're going to find out today, ZipRecruiter, they've been used to grow businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. So right now, any listeners to the Peristyle podcast can post a job on ZipRecruiter for free. So that's right, for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/style. That's ZipRecruiter.com/style. One more time, for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/style. And that's from the Peristyle. So that was ZipRecruiter's idea. But ZipRecruiter.com/style if you need to hire someone. Dan, I don't know if you're hiring anyone, but if you do, ZipRecruiter will help you out.
I tell you what, ZipRecruiter is everywhere. I mean, they are doing a heck of a job getting the word out, because I'm a big radio guy. If you live in L.A. and you do a lot of traveling around, you're going to be a radio guy. And you certainly are aware of ZipRecruiter, the official recruiter for USC, as they advertise. Now, I won't say that they're also the official recruiter for UCLA, but I think they are too, actually.
Nice. I don't know. I don't know about that, but they probably are. Yeah, I've heard them a lot, so pretty cool. All right. Well, let's roll on. Wanted to keep going with the questions. We have Rex in Georgia. He said, with all the Hail Marys that USC have seen, why do we not have Tyler Vaughns and some big receivers drop back to go get the ball and put pressure on a quarterback to keep them from passing? That could have been a huge swing for ASU. Also, Jamel Cook deflected that pass for Ross to get the interception and resulting TD. Rex in Georgia.
Yeah, Rex. I guess one of the reasons you might not put an offensive player back there is they may try to catch the ball, which, of course, USC's defensive players have tried to do the couple of times it's happened. And you think you'd have the defense. Maybe you should put some volleyball players back there. Just bring them just for the Hail Mary situation. Send them out there and tell them to spike the football. Because that play only works if you keep the ball alive instead of batting it into the ground. And I think USC, unfortunately, tried to keep the ball alive. They also, and you talk to guys and they say, well, my job was to not let anybody get behind me. Okay, you're at the goal line or inside the end zone. There's not so much room to get behind. The worry is there's no one standing in front of the receiver. That's the worry. That's what happened the last two times Arizona State did it, is, okay, you've got everybody behind them. That's fine. That doesn't prevent the ball to get to the guy who is trying to catch it for a touchdown. And if he's in the end zone, that's a problem. So as much as they work on it on Thursday when we're not there, so we don't exactly see what they do. They swear they work on it, but it didn't look like the plan was all that good a one. If you're going to – now, I will say this. Chris Hawkins said his job was not to let anybody get behind him. They didn't. But if they catch it in front of you, and Chris immediately pushed the guy, tried to push him out of the end zone, but it is a tough deal if there's nobody in front of the guy. That seems to be kind of a flaw in the plan, because he doesn't need to catch it and go anywhere. He catches it, it's a touchdown, which he probably did, although no one in the Pac-12 knows for sure. I'd love to get a chance to interview the guy in the replay booth to say, okay, he might have been in. He probably was in. I don't know. But how could you overturn it? Did you have a camera view that everybody else didn't have? Did you have somebody on the goal line sending you back a view that no one else saw? Because the officials on the ground were telling the USC players they didn't think it was a touchdown. Referee said he didn't think it was. He didn't call it. He said, it wasn't my call. They overruled me. What did you have other than, okay, I think he was in the end zone. It looks like he might have been in the end zone. It looks like he might have had control of the ball before he got pushed out. But really, I'm sorry. That's one of those plays where they wrote the rule so that if you didn't have indisputable evidence, you can't overturn it. And if all the guys on the field didn't call it a touchdown and you didn't have indisputable evidence, you can't call it a touchdown. But as we do every week, the Pac-12 embarrasses itself again with both teams off the field. I guess Clay Helton may have been the only person left from either team on the field. You've got a locker room that's a block and a half from the field for USC. Of course, Arizona State is right there, but USC is like a block and a half. So, and all of a sudden, by the time they go get them, here comes USC out of the other tunnel, the nearer tunnel, the tunnel that's easier to get to the field, which USC and the media, of course, after the game, were told, you can't go through that tunnel. No, that makes too much sense. That's the one that goes directly to the field from the locker room. No, you got to go to the other tunnel on the other side and take a longer walk around the new football facility. So at least the only good thing was USC said, to hell with this, because the guards, I guess, were telling them, you can't go back there. And the USC team said, no, they're telling us we got to go back. We're going the short way. Every one of these Pac-12 road games has got its own, wacky situations. But it doesn't get any wackier than at the end of the first half in Tempe. That was so silly.
Yeah, it was Pac-12 after dark. It was Pac-12 officials, all that stuff, all at once.
I would say this. The officials, you watched them during the game from that point on, and you got the sense they would huddle up a number of times when whatever else was happening, and you got the sense of, is there a way we can erase all the copies of this game so nobody knows we're here, we're the guys here? I mean, you got that, they had that look on their face, like, how do we not? Because if people ask us this week, which game did you do? can we tell them we weren't there? It wasn't us. they had a look on their face like, man, we're screwed. This is not going to look good on our resumes.
Yeah, not a resume builder there. Tyler and Sammamish, thoroughly enjoyed the win, but your word discrepancy in your early morning podcast hit the nail on the head. It's a, quote, remember these are 18 to 20-year-olds deal. Is it a remember these are 18 to 20-year-olds deal? Aren't all teams made up of 18 to 20-year-olds? My thoughts go more to coaching. Job one of coaching is have your team ready to play. Again, I love the win. But even with the win, my confidence in the current coaching staff is TBD. That's from Tyler.
You know, other than right now, Nick Saban, is there anyone who's not a TBD week to week? I mean, really, you've got a couple undefeated teams this year who haven't played anybody. Those people haven't become, you know, the new Nick Saban. You've got James Franklin, who was canonized on Friday. They took the canonization back on Saturday, I'm understanding. His last two giant games, Rose Bowl against USC, then the Ohio State game, they've had a tendency to collapse. I mean, they're really, you know, Clemson isn't there anymore. Obviously, Penn State isn't there anymore. Georgia, they're hanging in there. We'll see. Again, I don't know that there are a lot of coaches right now that you can, you know, Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. I mean, you know, how's that going? And Brian Kelly, you know, everybody would say, he's having a great year. They really are. They look like Notre Dame. And you think, well, they got rid of half their coaching staff, I think, and under duress, they basically told, you know, Brian Kelly that this is not acceptable and you better come up with some new guys and do it differently, and they are. But other than Nick Saban, I think they're all TBDs as far as I'm concerned. I mean, in the Pac-12, how many people have told us week after week after week, Chris Peterson, and you think he practically got shut out 2 weeks ago in Tempe. I mean, come on. With a team that hasn't had as many injuries even close as USC. So it's a crazy college football world. You wouldn't want to be investing a lot of money in a lot of these guys, which a lot of programs have, which is why they're still there, because of the buyouts are so humongous. But, TBD is a good word for it. and not year to year, week to week, TBD.
Yeah, it definitely has been. Let's see, next one. We got John in San Jose. He said, I love the show. When either of you are on the sidelines or at practice, do you get the feeling that the players treat Clay Helton like that, quote, cool substitute teacher that we all loved in school rather than the head man in charge? Would this be a reason why they came out flat at times or underperformed over the past 2 years? I remember Stuart Mandel mentioned on his podcast that last week at Notre Dame that the USC players were joking around on the sidelines while getting creamed. One last thing, would Clay Helton and his staff be as successful at another Pac-12 program? Right now they're 7-2, but they could easily be 5-4 in 2017 with the most talented team in the conference. Fight on, John in San Jose.
Yeah, I mean, I would think the Notre Dame game is a big example of a complete failure. They didn't get them ready for that game. They knew Notre Dame was going to come out and punch them in the mouth. They knew Notre Dame had a bye. You know, I'm a big guy. For example, all I'm doing is covering the game. And I usually feel like I need to go stop by South Bend on Friday to just get a sense of the vibe of the place. And how are they ready for this game? Because it is that one-of-a-kind intersectional rivalry that goes back to, you know, the mid-1920s. And it really, really matters, and it has a historical context. And so I think I've got to go over there. USC managers went over there. But here's the USC team sitting in some casino in Michigan City, Indiana, 35 miles away, all day Friday. They had a walkthrough, and then, you know, till kickoff at 7:30 or whatever it was Saturday night. And I just think it was really worthwhile when USC would go to places like that, and you'd have Anthony Munoz waiting for the team on Friday, or the Notre Dame students rocking the bus when they came in. And that really had a tendency to focus those players, especially when it was really a big game in South Bend. They even if they didn't realize what a big game it is, once they got there on the bus, it was, man, okay, this, okay, maybe I didn't get this, okay. But we understand some of the players were shocked when they got there Saturday night, what a big deal this was. I mean, first of all, you got to understand, there are often maybe 75,000 people in the parking lots and on campus who don't have tickets. They're just there for the party, for the tailgating. It's a really, really big deal. It's the usually last good weekend of the weather in northern Indiana, and they show up, and it really matters. And it really mattered to Notre Dame after what happened to them against USC the last two out of the last 3 years in L.A. And they had to have that game. And you would have liked the USC's kids to really understand what a big deal that game was. And I guess Brian Kelly spent a lot of the time in the 2 weeks building up to it, going over the history of the game, the history of all the things that have happened in the USC-Notre Dame game and all the coaches and players that have been involved. And that was a big theme. I'm not sure USC picked up on that quite enough. And I think the more of that kind of thing has to be done. The talk about is Clay the cool substitute teacher who's their friend, or the you know, the headmaster that they're all afraid of. I think at times he can be the headmaster, but maybe not all the time. And you know, you don't want him to, you know, carry a, you know, brass knuckles in his you know, in his coaching shorts, but you do want him. There was a lack of willingness, I think, at the Notre Dame game for the players to take it responsibility. It was almost like, and the week after, it was kind of a pass the buck situation. Like, who was really responsible? That they got it together at Arizona State is great, but you really would like it to be one of those situations where they're all responsible. And I don't know that you had enough of the seniors really confronting guys. And at times, yes, these guys aren't real vocal, these the older guys. And I think you need a combination of Clay and the older guys, and you got to coach them up. You really got to coach them up. You got to coach them hard. You got to coach them real hard. This is really hard to do. Having a great competitive national program in the running for the college football playoffs is awfully hard, and there are very few people that do it really, really well. And at USC, you have to have somebody who does that really, really well. It's one of the programs that, you know, year after year, you have to be thinking, how do we get into the playoffs? How do we win the Pac-12? And the Pac-12, you got to think, we're better than everybody in this league. We have better tradition, you know, better place to recruit from, better school in a lot of ways. You know, you're not as specifically limited, let's say, as a Stanford. But USC's got so much going for it that I think the head coach might have to be a tad more pushy. Again, I don't think Nick Saban works here, but Pete Carroll did. And I think you need a kind of a one-of-a-kind. It's a different place, and it's a different approach to having a national football program that is competitive every year. But again, you know, Clay's a young head coach, and he's figuring it out, what works best with his staff, what works best with his players. Some weeks it doesn't work. Some weeks it does. One hopes that you pick up the right things from the weeks that it works and are able to incorporate those in a permanent approach to this is how we do things. But we say it a lot. It's a work in progress. You got to keep progressing, and that's the key. But, you know, good question.
Yeah. We'll keep rolling through. We got a whole bunch. Nick from Cyprus, is this the true definition of a balance, this game versus ASU? The question is, how do we do that against Arizona next week for the de facto Pac-12 South title?
Well, I think there are games when USC probably has to go in thinking, go back to the Penn State game and think, okay, we may need to score a lot of points. That Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley, the receiver whose name I forget, the tight end and all, they got a lot of weapons that could hurt us. We got to score a lot of points. I think that's how you had to go into the Washington State game, just because it was that Friday night and they were five straight home games and they were sitting there waiting and they were all fired up and thinking they were really good. They, unfortunately for Washington State, found out exactly how good they are since then. But that was a game USC probably needed the offense to come out and play like USC. They didn't come out at all and play like anything. The same thing with Notre Dame. I think you go in there and knowing they got a pretty good offensive line. They got some good running backs. They know what they're doing. They're going to do it well. USC's banged up. We've got to outscore Notre Dame. You had to come out and play well offensively. Notre Dame pretty much gave them the pass game and just tried to shut it, tried to give them enough bad plays so that they had to make run perfect third down and longs and that kind of thing. But a lot of that was USC putting itself into those situations by running some really uninspired run plays and then and having to throw the ball. The difference with the Arizona State game was they did not do that. They didn't put themselves into bad places offensively. They came out throwing. They backed Arizona State off right away. They made Arizona State really aware of we're going to take advantage of you down the field. And they had guys that kept making plays, catching the ball. And that's what USC football has been about in the last few years when they're good. And so it was a combination, I think, of a lot of things. But, game plan and attitude, I think, were there completely for Arizona State. And they were missing completely for Notre Dame.
Yeah, they were. Jason Longhorn Country, speaking of catching the ball, is it me or does Tyler Vaughns remind you of a young Dwayne Jarrett with the cutting ability of Justin Davis?
He might have better hands than Dwayne Jarrett had. His cutting ability. The kid's name who came, the Arkansas transfer, Ryan, help me out.
Oh, Damian Williams?
Yeah, I think he reminds me more of him than anybody. He's just smooth as can be. Great body control. And, to hold on to that ball after he got busted in the head, the touchdown, that's amazing. I mean, I just think what he did there was just terrific. I mean, he said after the game he saw the hit coming, and I think he's got enough of that athleticism, that natural right reaction, that he relaxed and didn't, stiffen up and didn't make the hit worse, and kind of absorbed the blow. He does some terrific things naturally. That as Ryan has been saying since the first day we saw him in July in practice. I mean, that's where he's been all year. He'll make a great catch every single practice. Just every single practice. It's pretty amazing to watch him, but he's pretty gifted.
Yeah, I have some guys on Twitter like, you're wrong on this. He just had to wait his turn and blah blah blah. And I was like, what the heck are you talking about? They're like, well, there was guys with seniority over him. So I'm like, so if someone has seniority, they should play, as opposed to someone that's better.
But he wasn't just a little better. He's spectacular. He makes spectacular catches. Yeah. He makes those catches that I mean, and now I think we're finding out after watching Juju in the NFL as a rookie, maybe it took that to realize how good Juju can be and how athletic he can be and how gifted he was and how much he's missed. I mean, just think if Juju were still playing at USC this year. But in Tyler, you had a guy who could do some of those special things and make those special plays. And I think USC needs those guys on the field. They just, if you can do that, you're on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple. And you play, and if there are other things in terms of maturity and knowing everything that you have to know and all that, you get him up to speed. But you get him on the field. Get him on the field.
Exactly. It took USC a while. He didn't start till game five, which is just baffling. Eric in Duck Country. USC always seems to have trouble against mobile quarterbacks. Will they be able to hold up against Arizona? And we also had like Tarek say, what's the best way to slow down Khalil Tate? So a lot of Khalil Tate stuff here.
Well, I mean, I think because they don't see that many of them, you know, where the mobile quarterback becomes the primary offensive weapon for somebody, it isn't easy in this day and age when there aren't many people running the option with a real option quarterback. So, you know, you always have to have somebody responsible for the quarterback. You don't want a situation where, well, I want you responsible for the quarterback, but if he pitches it, I want you over here too. And then you have those guys in there in no man's land. They're like got one arm out toward the quarterback and one arm out. No, you can't do that. You got to coach it up right in terms of the responsibilities, and you got to have everything covered, and then you got to tackle well, and you can't reach. You see some of these highlight plays from him, and you see four or five guys like reaching, and you think, what were they thinking? They had no chance. You can't reach and touch him on the hip pad or something and think that's like going to affect him at all. I mean, it's not. And you see so many people with bad angles, or they're coming in from the side, and you realize they're not going to get there in time. You've got to keep leverage on him, and you've got to, you know, really contact him. You can't just you can't be up high because he's got enough power to go with that speed. But this is another game where you might go in and say, okay, maybe we need, let's just plan on scoring 50. And I don't think they can beat us if we score 50. And that's one of the ways I would approach a game with Arizona, is you go in and say, we got to go, we're going to figure on how do we score 50. Play tempo, score every time you get it, no three and outs, no punts, and let your offense win this game for your defense. And then, stay on the field, score the ball, and then let your defense go out there. And then do it the next time and the next time. And that's kind of how I would approach Arizona.
Yeah, agree with that one. Ben from the Central Valley, he said, okay, so I watch a satisfying game like this and think, hey, a Pac-12 championship seems very possible. But as inconsistent as we've been, am I just getting my hopes up too soon? I tried not to get too down after last week's quote-unquote game, but do not want to get too excited after this win. Am I correct in saying that no one should know what to expect from our guys? Thanks for all you guys do, and let's hope for a bear beatdown. Fight on, and go Dodgers, from Ben.
Yeah, Ben, after the Notre Dame game, I refrained from picking anyway the Arizona State game, even though I wasn't displeased with practice last week. Again, I'm not crazy about the no pads November starting in October and Tuesday. But we'll give them that they got their, I think they got their heads right first and their hearts right, and then everything else came with it. The game plan did not set them back. The game plan on both offense and defense seemed to do the job. And special teams, I thought the coverage was as good as it's been all year. I thought they really covered everything well. 48-yard average net punting, they were right there on those things. Kickoff coverage was good and well planned. The 51-yard field goal, so you got to give Chase McGrath, that's great. So there were a lot of good things that came out of last week. The other thing was they knew how important that was. I fault them for not knowing how important the Notre Dame game was, but I'll give them credit. They knew how important the Arizona State game was, and they showed up like they knew how important it was. You didn't see the dumb grabs. You saw a game where Arizona State was the team committing all the dumb penalties. How good is that for USC to go out there with their heads on straight and not do the dumb penalty kind of thing? And then give them credit. They didn't let the craziness on the Hail Mary at the half throw them off at all. That's a team that looked really well-grounded in terms of who they are and what they were going to do, and nothing was gonna bother them. So, in college football and in the Pac-12, man, it's a week-to-week thing. What was that? The second time they beat the spread, I guess, Ryan?
Yeah, it was.
All year.
Just the second time.
So, you wouldn't want to get your hopes up. I mean, let's say they're 14-0 at the Coliseum under Clay, so it wouldn't be wrong to say you got your hopes up and you have an Arizona team that the USC offense should have some success against. So at this point, now it's all about containing Khalil Tate, and they do have another kid that can run like crazy too. So they've really got to. They've got to do everything right on defense, and they'll be fine. But, we've seen games where they haven't come in like that. One hopes that they only take the good things out of the Arizona State win. They don't take anything that says, boy, are we really good now. You want them to say, well, we were good last week, but we'll see about this week. This week will be determined by us this week. Last week is completely irrelevant to this week. Sure, you can take the good stuff out of it, but you can't rest on it even a little bit. So, things are falling in place. They've got to. I mean, let's face it. They ought to win the Pac-12. They got the best team. They got the best players.
Yeah.
Got the most history and tradition. You know.
They easily could. Or they could lose two of the next three, and then who knows what goes on. We just don't know. we're over the hour mark, but we still got a bunch more. I'll just try to go through them quick. Mark, he said, ask Shotgun, so he wants you to ask Shotgun, how many blocks Nico Fala missed tonight and how many bad snaps? He has over 10 misses and 4 bad snaps. I haven't rewatched it yet, but I don't know if you noticed any of that, Dan.
It didn't seem to be a great night, I mean, you don't always. One of the things you don't always know. This is where I get a little hesitant, because you do not know exactly the blocking scheme. You don't know exactly what the play was. So who was responsible for what? So there are times when it can happen that you look at the play and you assume this. This guy missed this block, and then you find out later, this is what they were doing, or he was taking this guy, and they were pulling or whatever. So I tend to, I mean, you can grade the snaps, that's for sure, but as far as all the blocks, until all the assignments, that's a little, probably a little tricky to start doing that. So I tend to. That's another area where I tend to not be as judgmental at times.
We had Scott in San Diego. Persecutor, I feel bad. He wrote in a couple of times. They were more like message board posts, like multiple paragraphs. Persecutor, we love you. Just can't read all that on the Peristyle. On the podcast. Try to keep them short so we can read it and start discussing what you want to talk about. Scott in San Diego says, hey, Peristyle podcast crew, this is a text message. Question for Dan, when do you think the Pac-12 will acknowledge that their officials are the worst in the country? The officiating during the ASU game has been atrocious. The Hail Mary made no sense to me. We talked about that already, but overall, if you want to talk about the officiating, Dan.
Well, they try. I mean, I heard Clay today at the Monday Morning Quarterback saying you know, that David Coleman, who I've liked a lot, that they hired full-time as the vice president for, you know, officiating, a former, I guess he was a colonel, retired colonel and an NFL official, and a good guy. And I've sat next to him at USC games in the press box, and he's great to talk to. I just don't know what the limitations are, that you still have these plays, these games where you just say, what? I mean, I did spend some time in the SEC and in the Big Ten. I actually went to officials' meetings in the Big Ten where they would show the film from the previous week. I got to know the head of the officials in the Big Ten, and I just got a different feeling about competence in the Big Ten and the SEC. You just had a feeling. Now, agree with them or not, that referee at a Kentucky-Tennessee game last week, he said, I'm giving an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty to everybody on both teams because of the brawl. And whoever gets the next one is out. Well, I mean, whether you agree or not, that guy was in charge of the game, and he knew it. And I don't see that level of somebody who's really in charge in the Pac-12. I mean, the history of the Pac-12 is you have, like, the glasses ref, you know, who everybody, oh, my gosh, no, we got the glasses ref tonight. Now, he's retired. But that was kind of the tradition in the Pac-12. I don't know why. It's happened that way, but I do see people that just don't look confident, comfortable, or competent. And that's not a good thing. And, you know, and unfortunately, the officials, the good ones that come along, very often get snapped up by the NFL. And there has been a, you would hear this, that all of the other leagues in the West, Mountain West, and the WAC and other conferences would say that they just didn't bring any new blood into the Pac-12 for a long time. And all these big conferences, everybody says it's political, it's who you know, and all that kind of thing. But that they didn't replace enough of those guys, or they didn't bring in enough of the really good officials from other conferences when other conferences were doing that. But, yeah, it's, you know, it might be marginally better, but marginally better isn't probably good enough for where the Pac-12 has been for a long time.
Well, I got one last one. We'll let you go, Dan. Bill said, so he wrote this before the ASU game. He said, it looks like USC will be extremely deficient on the defensive line again. The offense will need to carry the team. I hope they were up to the task. I respect both your opinions and history covering the program. It sounds like both of you think a 10-2 season would be a poor record for USC. I don't think so, but not sure I understand why. This team is what it is. It's not what the preseason hype machine wanted it to be. With all of his shortcomings, it's still a good, not great football team. After watching the program for 43 years, I can say I'm proud of these Trojans. Fight on. And thanks for the great job you do for all USC fans and alumni. From Bill.
Yeah, a 10-2 won't be bad. I mean, I think and we know that all five teams in the Pac-12 in the last 2 years that have had to play back-to-back road games with the second one, the short week Friday, have lost, including three favorites. I don't care. They should not have lost the Washington State game. They weren't prepared. They weren't ready physically, mentally. The game plan was awful, both sides of the ball. That was, as we've now seen, that was pretty much of a disgrace considering where we've seen Washington State go when people really come after them. The Cal game the next week was a perfect example of a Cal team with a lot less talent than USC has, just went after them with everything they had and ran them off the field. So I think, and the Notre Dame beatdown was ridiculous. There's just no way that, not saying they had to win that game, knowing how Notre Dame was going to come in, but they should have made it where they had a chance. And they did have a chance until they stopped themselves and gave away 21 points to start. Okay, so those two, those shouldn't have happened. 11-1 is maybe what this team probably had a real shot to be this year, and that puts you in the Pac-12 championship game unbeaten. And looking at the way everybody in the North is performing recently, you have a chance to be 12-1, and you're in the darn playoffs. Now, whether that's good enough, if you get Alabama in the first game, maybe not. But so this is kind of a disappointment, even if they end up 10-2 in the regular season. I think a little bit of not quite being where they could have been, and that should disappoint not only them but us. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think they had that shot. Ryan did not have maybe the same sense of going into the season as I did, but that would be me, and Ryan might say he's 10-2 is probably better, or at least as good as he thought they could be.
No, I thought they could be better for sure. You're right, but I think when you look at the grand picture, the grand scheme of things, when people are like, "Well, this team still controls its own destiny," and there's kind of a hollow message sometimes because we know the team hasn't been playing well. But if they beat Arizona State and Arizona in back-to-back weeks, Colorado doesn't look very good, although they bounce back and they look better this past game. And then, who knows about UCLA. But if you win out and you win the South, and the important thing to me is winning the Pac-12. And I think some people discount that. I think it's really important to win the Pac-12. If they do that and they go to the Fiesta Bowl or something, you look back and say, okay, they started off terrible and won 9 in a row, won the Rose Bowl. They got blown out by a rival. They lost a game on the road they shouldn't have, but they won the rest and went to Fiesta Bowl, and who knows, that maybe they beat a good team in that. And you look back and say, okay, those are, overall, they're still pretty good seasons. Now, they screwed up themselves. They could have had a lot better season, but I think in the grand scheme of things, if you're a fan, people felt really good about the Rose Bowl win. They forgot about the 1-3 start. And if they, go on a run, they'll forget about the Notre Dame game. And, maybe get a win in the Fiesta Bowl. So there's still a lot, I think, that can be played for. I think fans should be happy with, if you make that kind of a bowl and that kind of run. But, it hasn't happened yet. It's going to be a tough one this weekend. Just getting through Arizona is going to be tough enough.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it is getting better. Are you getting better? And everybody had the sense last year that they, kind of hit rock bottom and they got better. And they kept, doing whatever they had to do to keep getting there. Arizona State, they got better. They got a lot better from the week before. And if they can do that, that's not up and down and up and down, but if they can, keep progressing, who knows? Would they possibly, could the bottom drop out on a number of teams, enough teams around the country that they could even be remotely in consideration again? Probably not. There are so many teams, the Miamis and Wisconsins and people like that, who just haven't played anybody even remotely with a heartbeat, that the bottom might not be able to drop out far enough from those teams. But I you would love it if, say USC could maybe get in a bowl where they would get, say a Wisconsin team that only lost in the championship game to Ohio State or whatever, and get a chance to finish up against somebody like that, a one-loss team in a really good bowl, and perform well. I think everybody would be pretty excited about that. But they got to get, just keep getting better so that there's progress week to week, that you don't have those big drop back moments. And if they do that, the Arizona, Colorado, UCLA finish is a great way to go. And they'll remember if they're better by the time they get to UCLA and make a statement in that game. People will be pretty pleased with that. And then we'll see. It's a shame you can't go back to the Rose Bowl unless you get to the playoffs. And that's kind of the shame, I think, knowing that this season's set up for a very likely even a classic Rose Bowl with a Big Ten and USC game if they both got there in the Rose Bowl. That was something that I think they had a legitimate shot at aiming for. And if they miss that, that'll still be kind of a disappointment. But they can still make this a season that everybody's pretty pleased with, considering the injuries.
Yeah, they're pretty pleased last season. It started off dreadfully. They can be pretty pleased this season too. Just depends how these last few games go. All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. Look forward to seeing you out there at practice tomorrow. We'll get a feel for what it's like. It didn't look like they did anything different last week in practice, and lo and behold, they come out and play completely different. So who knows what to expect this week?
Well, the game plan, I think the game plan being different changed everything. I thought it was very smart, both sides of the ball. I thought they were really smart. They did not shoot themselves in the foot. Now, I know Clay said, well, he thought they'd been shooting themselves in the foot with turnovers and penalties. I would add bad game plan to those two things. And this week was good game plan week.
All right, good game plan week. We'll see if they keep that going against Khalil Tate, Rich Rod, and the Arizona Wildcats. All right, well, that's Dan Weber. Thanks so much to our sponsors, ZipRecruiter, and, of course, Trader Joe's. We appreciate all of you tuning in and talking, sending in your questions, sending in your comments, asking about this football team. We enjoy answering them all and talking about this team as well. So we'll let you go for this week. We'll probably do another show, preview show with Arizona, and maybe a recruiting one. We'll see how it all goes down. But this is our third podcast. It's only Monday, but we'll make sure we get one or two more for you later on the week. So that's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.